Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to Talk Junkies, where today's going to be a very interesting day, as it is each and every single week here at Talk Junkies. Been a while since I've done a podcast, probably been about 4 weeks. I believe the last person I had on was Dan, and we got into a really good conversation about the Constitution. The first 30 minutes that we did talk, it was kind of about current events, the Hawaii-Maui fires, and some other stuff like that. But then towards the later half, we get deep into the Constitution and the importance of that. I can't reiterate that enough. We've done multiple podcasts on the Constitution. That's just kind of where we're at. So if you're interested in that type of stuff, check out our last podcast. Thank you again to Howdy Mikowski, man. The video before Dan's, it took Talk Junkies to over 1,000 subscribers. So I appreciate that, Howdy, in your base that watches your videos. Thank you for tuning in to Talk Junkies. We have a fantastic guest coming on today, this afternoon. She's been on Talk Junkies before with her first book that she wrote called Instead of Schooling. She's very... there's not really many words I can use to describe what she is, but she's amazing, awesome, and very smart. She has a lot of credentials. I'm not going to go into those. If she wants to, she can, but her name is Caprice Lee. We're going to be talking about her second book today, Healing from School, Reclaim Your Creative Genius. And Caprice, how you doing? Thanks for joining. It's good to see you and good to talk to you.
Yeah, it's great to see you, Paula.
Well, how have you been? So on your journey now... And is this your second book? Sorry, I can't remember if you wrote a book before Instead of Schooling.
No, it is my second book. And the reason that I wrote it is, I think Instead of Schooling is a good how-to guidebook for how you would get started with home education for your children and why you would want to do it. But this is an extension because the past year has really made me realize that almost everything that we have been taught in school is false. So it's not even sufficient for you to pull your kids out of school and homeschool them. You have to be really vigilant in focusing on the content, because the math that school teaches is to dumb us down. The science is to create a false version of reality. The history is to make us patriotic towards this false government. And so it's almost better to just let your children play and garden than to reproduce school at home right now.
No, for sure. And that's wild that they hit it from every stage, from every angle, that you are in public education. We talked about in the last podcast, the Rockefellers, J.D. Rockefeller started a lot of, I think it was like $100 million that he put in and created public education. Kids and families were forced at gunpoint to go to public schools. So I think that's wild that one, it's lasted this long and people haven't kind of woken up to it, especially like maybe in the 50s, 60s, and 70s. I don't know if there was a golden period where public education was not as bad as it is today, but how did you kind of get to this point where you kind of exposed the riches of the schools? How did you get to this point and why did you want to write the book?
For me, it's just been a personal quest to figure out what is true and what is false in this world. So it's really more of my curiosity. I've never been a person who just accepts the status quo or, oh, that's just the way it is, Caprice, accept it. I'm like, well, why, what's going on here? And I think that I've really honed my skills of discerning truth. And so much that I keep seeing repeated over and over just rings false. I've also just become fascinated, the connection between science and spirituality or connection to God has really fascinated me. So as I've been studying the work of Walter Russell, who was an amazing individual, he had a near-death experience every 7 years of his life for the first 49 years. And reading his work just totally makes you look at the universe and light and energy, differently. So it made me question, I guess, especially since I home educated my daughters and my oldest K-12, right? And I said K-12, she got a free ride to college. So I was sitting alongside her and tutoring her for biology and chemistry and earth science. And as I read Walter Russell, and as I'm right now really exploring deeply biogeometry, so as I look at this, it shatters my mind and realizes that everything that I taught her as a home schooling mom was false. It's like once you really look at how the universe operates, and I'm not saying that I even understand it, I'm kind of scratching the surface, But what we are fed in school is this childish, cartoonish version of reality.
No,
and that's sure. what we're fed over and over by the media, right? And repeated. It's like you learn the same thing in 12 years or 13 years of school, and they just keep repeating it over and over and over again. And you have no way to go out into the world and see if any of this is true. Like, how are you going to know if the version of the atom with the electron orbits that are so complicated is true? You can't.
Yeah, you're supposed to take their word for it.
Right, until you realize, which I realized in reading some of these great works, that it's just a theory. And the reason that the atomic theory is so complicated with all of the different electron orbit shapes and everything, SG, whatever, is because the theory doesn't work once you move past hydrogen, the first element on the periodic table. So they kept having to add all of these complexities to make it this theory work.
Oh, my goodness.
Right?
Like you said, that's just scratching the surface. But I think you make a good point. And I guess kind of my question to that is, why, what would they benefit out of just making workers and not thinkers? What would they benefit of just reiterating and repeating and regurgitating throughout, you know, the 12 years that you're in school? I guess we kind of see an example of it, but I feel like it's getting worse and worse by the day. I have a family member who's a teacher. She teaches seventh grade social studies. And she said she's never seen it this bad, and she's in a nice area. It's not like an impoverished area or anything like that. It's a, you know, it's a decent medium income household, you know, in the area. And she says that she has people in seventh grade who can't read, because a couple years ago they had switched the curriculum from like phonics or something like that on how they taught kids how to read from kindergarten to fourth grade. They completely switched it out here in the Midwest, and now they're having, you know, catastrophic consequences of people not being able to read. And I almost feel like that's by design. I don't know if that's from stupidity or if it's by design. And if it's by design, what are they trying to accomplish by that?
It's absolutely 110% by design. And it started after World War II, because there are some excellent books that and that were written in the 1950s that I refer to in both of my books that showed that whole word instruction creates illiteracy and what they call dyslexia. And I even got that when I was in school with all of these. This is going to show my age. So I was, you know, in school in the elementary school in the 70s. And we had all these stupid Dick Jane books, right? See Spot Run. And so they're teaching you by you memorize the whole word. But that's not how men and women are designed to learn to read. We're designed to take the phenomes apart and put them back together. And the reason I know so much about this is my oldest daughter is dyslexic. And what it really means to be dyslexic is you are born without phonemic awareness. So we naturally can take apart and put words together, but she can't. So I had to get a tutor to teach her all the phenomes, right? So what does it benefit by creating an entire populace that's illiterate? Well, if you're illiterate, you can't go back and read Plato and Kepler and Benjamin Franklin or Jonathan Swift or like some of these people who were amazing, Thomas Paine. You know, you can't go back to source documents and read the truth. You're just going to be fed this visual cartoon version that's getting even worse because now they've got AI involved, right? And what is AI? AI has no morality. So they're going to just give you this distorted version of reality that you cannot go back and litmus test for yourself if you can't read.
So the biggest thing for you in that regard is that they kind of want us to forget the important writings of very famous and important people from the past. And I'm sure there's a little bit more to it than that, but that's probably the main reason why is they don't want us to be able to look back into the past and understand what that was.
Right. And I mean, I think there was also a study that I put in my book where they saw it. So that was like 13.5%, only 13.5% of 15-year-olds could tell fact from fiction when they're reading something. So it's not just that you are like illiterate, it's like you can't discern if what you're reading makes sense. So it's definitely engineered that way. And I guess I was lucky that by the time I hit kindergarten, first grade, I was already a reader. So their dumb whole word instruction like just bored me to tears because I could already read.
You didn't want the personal pan pizza from Pizza Hut?
I actually got sent to the corner in first grade for reading ahead in a Dick and Jane book.
Oh, that's.
I had to stand with my nose in the corner the whole day for reading ahead in a book.
Yeah, they were a little more. The teachers were allowed to do a little bit more in those times. I know I was in grade school in the 90s, and the teachers couldn't do anything like that. But I also think it's interesting that you talk about, like, at the age of five, that I believe it was 95% of all 5-year-olds are geniuses. And by the time that they turn 18, that goes all the way down to 2%, I believe it is. So can you kind of just go into that a little bit? Because I find that fascinating. I never would have thought that most 5-year-olds are geniuses until I saw that.
So, yeah, it was a study that was done in the 1960s, and it was really commissioned by NASA because they wanted to know how to hire more geniuses. So they hired George Land and his team to go out and figure out, like, what makes a genius. So they started with a group of 5-year-olds and they gave them a creativity test. So the way they defined genius was, how do you use your creative imagination to solve problems? And what they found was, of this group of 5-year-olds, 98% qualified as geniuses. Then they came back 5 years later when this group was 10 years old and it was down to 30%. 5 years later at 15, it was down to 12%. And then I think they just kind of gave up in, like, disgust. But George Land took it further and went out and surveyed adults and found that only 2% of adults. And the thing that's also very interesting is he attributed this to school, 100% to school, that you would take a population, 98% genius, and dumb them down to 2%. And one of his quotes that I love is, he said, uncreative behavior and thinking is learned. So, yeah. So what you do when you take your kid and you put them in these government indoctrination camps is you're going to disconnect them from their genius. Now, you can't kill it because we're naturally innately creative with an imagination and genius, but you can convince them that they're not. And the way that schools do that is your imagination is kind of your right brain pattern thinking, right? And when you're just doodling around and you're trying to figure out a problem and then you set it down and your mind is at rest, all of a sudden you have an aha moment. Like, nobody knows where that comes from. I think it's kind of from God, from universal intelligence, but only when you're prepared for it because you've been doing the work around the topic. If you look at school, what they do is they just train the left side of your brain and they fill it with information. And they've got lots and lots and lots of procedures and punishments if you go outside of the box, right? If you're coloring outside of lines, you get a bad grade. If you don't give the right answer, you know, they just want one answer. They want you to parrot back the information they fed into the left side of your brain. That's not learning. That's just dumbing you down to be a parrot.
No, for sure. So what are the implications? And I know it's probably a very easy question, but whenever you take them from 98% to 2% by the time that they're 18, I mean, those are catastrophic implications of what it is to be, or what it is in this society. So I'm kind of going to go off on a rant here, and I know I just asked you a question, but there are other countries where they have better education, right? Because the United States is all organized public education that's government funded throughout all the countries, all of it's the same shit, essentially.
Yeah, pretty much, especially in the West. And I mean, I even now, like in China, because they test a lot of their technocracy in the classrooms in China.
Right. So, but you always see those, those rankings of the best education by country. And I'm just curious, whoever's on top, I have no idea who it is. I should have looked that up before we did the podcast, but I'm just curious. They're just better at testing. They're just better at just what it is for what is public education. That's all it is they're just better at it than we are.
Yeah, I mean, Finland is one that ranks really high. I don't know exactly where it ranks, but I don't know. Maybe 10 years ago, I met a teacher from Finland. We were at the same education conference in Colorado. And so I was talking to him and saying, well, what do you attribute your, you know, high rankings and everything to? And he said, well, we're a really small, homogenous population. We don't have the challenges that you have in the United States with such a heterogeneous population where, you know, there's Spanish and English and just lots of difficulties. They don't have the same kind of socioeconomic difficulties we have, where kids will show up to school without having eaten breakfast, you know, really things like that. But when you do look at the schools in Finland, they don't start formal kind of education teaching till they're 8 years old. So a child in Finland will not be taught any math at all until they're 8 years old, because they realize that they're not developmentally ready for that. Whereas we create a lot of learning disabilities in the United States by forcing children to do things they're developmentally not ready for. And then we say, oh, we can't leave anybody behind. But all we do is engender extreme stress and anxiety in parents when they think that their kid has fallen behind on an artificial timeline that isn't real at all. Like, it doesn't matter when you learn to read. It doesn't, as long as you learn to read. Now, my daughter is one of the few that needed a lot of support and tutoring to get there. But one of my good friends is a gifted and talented teacher and consults in those programs. And she told me that gifted, I don't even know how gifted and talented is now, you know, defined. It was, but she said with her experience, she finds they either learn really early, 4 years old, or they'll learn really late, 12 years old. I mean, there's no timeline for when you learn to read, except because all of the schools are now doing these mass surveillance systems. They're going to have this mass record on you. So if your child is in school now, when they go to get into the workforce, they're going to know exactly when your kid learned to read. They're going to know everything. They're going to, now they're trying to put in, this is the scariest thing. In Dallas Unified School District, they're piloting this program where there are facial recognition cameras all over the place. Like, there's not 1 minute when a student in these public schools is not being surveyed, right? And what are they watching for? They're trying to develop a baseline for normal behavior based on body language, facial like expressions. And so if that changes from baseline, then the administration is alerted, and that, I don't know what they're gonna do. What are they trying? Like, maybe they're saying it's for school safety, but I don't want my kid to be in a, you know, 24/7 surveillance system. That's ridiculous.
So, and I think that they would, the pretext to that would say it's to stop school shootings or mass shootings. And that's what they would use for that type of software. I know a gentleman out here who's, you know, involved in selling like software technology and stuff like that. And he had mentioned that they are in the works, or they have some type of software. I think it's basically what you just described. And it's to the point, and they, again, they use the pretext it's for school safety, but the software can recognize an open carried gun within seconds and shut the whole school down. So I think they're going to use it for safety, but they're really using it for what you're describing.
Right. You know, and like, you know, I mean, this is a bit different, but do you really feel safer flying because you're taking your shoes off?
Right.
Right. I don't know. I don't.
No, I mean, me neither. But that's just where we're at. That's crazy. That's. I almost feel like it's inevitable. We've had people on here talked about technocracy. We've seen what's happened in China and how dreadful it is out there with the social credit score. And you just see it slowly being implemented into the United States. And when you evolve it into public education, that's, I mean, yeah. What was it? It was a record number of homeschooling this year, wasn't it?
It keeps going up, and that is a great thing, you know. And the thing that, you know, the parallel that I draw is like, why is social media free? It's because we are the products, right?
Yep.
Why is public schooling free? Because we are the products.
So who are the top people in the public education? Who are the top people on the board? Or does that really even matter? Are there people behind the curtains that are really pulling the strings for public education?
Well, I think at this point, you really have to look at who are creating the curriculum, because it's standardized across the nation and they're making tons of money. Who are the big ed tech players that are doing these highly invasive playlists and tracking systems? And then who's involved in teacher training? So one of the big things you can look at is the National Education Association, because 13.2 million teachers are a member of that association. And all you have to do is go to their website and look for their 2022-23 principles, and you will see what they believe. Like, they believe that it's their job to teach every child in public school that they are living in a society of white supremacy. And, you know, it goes on and on. They have a very political agenda, and they are responsible for, you know, teacher training. And then you've got a lot of the diversity, equity, and inclusion training of the teachers that is going on. And if you really look at DEI, because I did, you know, I'm looking at universities for my daughter, who still has this like rosy colored glass view of, you know, the Ivy League school. When you go to the college and university websites, you see their DEI policies, and it's just Marxism. It's just Marxism rebranded. You know, it's like, and it's doublespeak. It's George Orwell's doublespeak. Diversity does not mean diversity. It means we have one view, and anybody that, you know, goes away from that view is wrong. Equity is, you know, it's equal outcomes. It's not equal opportunity. So it's socialism. And this is how I explained it to my daughters, which is, I know that a lot of your friends think socialism is a good thing. But let's pretend you go to a college class and the professor says, everybody's going to get a C, no matter if you put in any effort, if you show up, if you do your best, everybody just gets a C. That's equity. And what it does is it takes away personal motivation and excellence, because who cares? You know, if I spend hours and hours trying to write the best paper possible and I get a C, like, why would I do that? So, you know, and then you have to really, you won't learn this in school, but the dark side of socialism, like over 200 million people have been murdered in the name of that, you know?
Right.
It's just, it doesn't work. You end up with populations that are enslaved and impoverished and murdered.
Oh yeah. So I know we're kind of jumping around here, and if at any point there's something specifically you want to kind of get into about your book, by all means, I'm completely 100% down for that. But like on this path that we're on, and we know it's a moving train that I don't think it can be derailed, but you have people like Trump recently come out. And again, I talked about earlier before the podcast started, you and I are kind of on the same page when it comes to what's currently happening in the landscape of America or in the world in general. But you have people like Trump, and you have Vivek, you know, one of the candidates as a Republican, where they both kind of talk about abolishing public education and getting rid of it and kind of just putting it in the state's hands and allowing, like, I don't know how they described it, and I can't remember exactly how Vivek described it, but he said he would get rid of teachers' unions, and that would make more competition, and it would put schools out there on blast who are trying to teach critical race theory or gender, you know, gender types of things. Do you believe any of these candidates who say they're going to do that? And is it even possible?
Oh, yeah. I mean, definitely. Like, a president has the ability to abolish the Department of Education. I mean, I think that's what needs to be done. But why didn't President Trump do that when he was president and when he had a Republican House and Senate?
Right.
If he was going to do it, he would have done it then.
Yep.
So I think it's popular talking points that are going to appeal to voters. And the problem is that Americans don't hold these politicians accountable. They don't say, hey, wait a minute, you said you were going to do this, why aren't you doing this?
Right.
Because it's just all rhetoric and it's political theater.
Yeah. So, but would you agree with, like, I mean, the types of policies? So if you were to abolish public education, what would be a solution that would work? I mean, I know not everyone can homeschool, and I know some people use public education as a place for their kids to eat, a place for them to be, because they got to work and all those types of things. I'm not saying that that shouldn't exist, but, like, kind of in your eyes, do you agree with, like, Vivek, I guess? I don't know. Have you heard of him before?
So I did watch a video. He seems to be a bit of a narcissist to me.
Right. Oh, yeah. Same. But whenever he talked about abolishing public education and how he described it, of course, he's a smooth talker and he can, you know, make people believe in what it is that he says. But it sounded like a better opportunity for education than what we currently have.
Well, I think that the two best things that any president could do would be definitely abolish the Department of Education, because education should be decided at the local level, at the school board level. And it shouldn't need to be uniform across the country. So abolish Department of Education, maybe abolish the state departments of education, because they're just bloated bureaucracies. And that's where most of the funding goes to. It doesn't go to the teachers in the classroom. So get rid of these bloated bureaucracies that are just standardizing and indoctrinating kids. And then the other thing, which is a little more revolutionary, but what is definitely necessary, is we need to get rid of the compulsory education laws. Like, people think that they're free, but if you don't send your kids to a school or legally homeschool them, which the National Education Association is trying to make homeschooling illegal, you know, like, the government's telling you what you need to do. So if we abolish the compulsory education laws and get rid of all of these bloated Department of Education, then we can have some innovation. Then, you know, because once you get rid of that, then you're not going to have all this taxpayer money going to these public schools, and taxpayers will actually have more money to do what they want for their kids. Because the funny thing is, I think the average, maybe my data is a little outdated, but I think on average we spend $13,000 per student per year for public education. There's been a study done, a homeschooling family on average will spend $800 a year, and the outcomes are better. So if we think about it, if we get rid of all of this bureaucracy and the compulsory laws, you're going to have some really dedicated teachers who can say, hey, I'm creating a learning pod, you know, spend your money with me.
Yeah, exactly.
Right?
100%, yeah. So that would be interesting. I just don't think, you know, just being a Debbie Downer here, I just don't foresee that happening. I just think it's going to be, this is what it is. And is there anything that people can do to, I know, go to local meetings and stuff like that, but you would need people in numbers to show up and vote that type of way. Cause these people are making money and they're not going to just lightly give it up, you know?
No. I mean, so I tried to start 2 charter schools in California for self-design. And this was in 2012. So the interesting thing is, I was working with a charter school consulting group, and the woman said, hey, apply for this competitive federal grant for your charter schools. You're not going to get the grants. Nobody gets the grants the first year, but at least you'll try and you'll know how to get it next year. So I submitted my applications for these grants. It was $250,000 per charter school. One charter school was going to be online and one was hybrid, and they were self-directed learning. So really putting the child at the center and creating the curriculum around them versus marching them through a standardized curriculum. So the funny thing is, I got the $500,000 from the U.S. Department of Education to start these charter schools, and I could not get them authorized at the school board level. And I couldn't get, like, I had to have all these parents sign the petitions that they wanted them. And they did want these charter schools, but they wouldn't come to the school board meetings. And the school board meetings were so, they were so nasty, and that they were so belligerent towards me. Like, I had a woman who has since passed, but she was the former mayor of the town I was in. She ran one of the biggest, like, private schools there. She was on my board. She stood up and spoke, and she was like, I couldn't believe how antagonistic they were. I could barely open my mouth, Caprice. So then I had to shut down the project. Even though I had the money, I couldn't get them authorized, and the county board of education was corrupt. So once I shut down these projects, parents came out of the woodwork and were like, well, Caprice, what am I going to do now for my kids? I was counting on your charter schools. And I was like, well, where were you in those school board meetings? So if parents want different schools, they have to get active.
Yeah.
And they can't get intimidated by these people that are sitting on the school boards. Like, in the county I was in, if you were on the school board, you didn't get paid, but you got benefits. You got free benefits. So, you know, I'm not saying that's why they were doing it, but, you know, it was really heartbreaking for me, because I was really trying to do these for my daughters.
Well, and I guess one good thing that's coming out of all of this, and we talked about earlier how the number of people who are homeschooling, that's increasing. And if that's the case, I feel like those people would be more likely to go to those types of meetings and try and create an environment like that, where there are more charter schools with self-directed learning. I just don't think very many people think about it. I don't think that it's something that they think about. They're just like, oh, I don't like what's being taught at schools, because those hot topics come up, like gender and critical race theory and whether or not a boy can use a girl's restroom. Those are probably typically the reasons why parents are pulling their kids out of school, not because they're like, you know, like 5 years ago, whenever none of that stuff was happening, they kept their kids in school because they're okay with the status quo of what education was then. But mm-hmm. then they bring in these hot topics, and then that's what's created this divide and why people are pulling their kids out of school. It's not for the real reasons. You know what I'm saying?
Right. Well, and it's, you know, and it's bullying, and it's all of these crazy shooter drills. Like, why do you have to involve the children in these traumatic shooter drills that they do a couple times a semester? Why don't you just do it with the teachers so the teachers know what to do? You know, so there's a lot of just trauma that's being inflicted on these kids. And you know, I applaud anyone that takes their kids out of these camps. but I think the biggest mistake is then they feel like they need to reproduce school at home. And so what a lot of my work is, and a lot of the coaching I do, you know, on my website, which is capricelee.com, if you want to check it out, I have a lot of free resources. I have a huge thing you can download of free resources for home education. But I think the biggest mistake is if parents are going to home educate their kids, they need to de-school themselves first.
Which is going to be tough. I mean, actually, probably not, because I haven't been to public education in over, I think it's been like 16 years. So it wouldn't be that hard. But it's all new. So for anyone who is going to try and teach their kids, I would definitely suggest checking out your website and looking at all those free resources. Because in today's age, nothing comes for free. And a lot of these programs that you download through the government or, you know, keep teaching your kid the school's type stuff, you have to pay for that. It's like 10 bucks a month or 20 bucks a month just so that they can be on a learning path and collect coins to see where they rank. You know, like, I'm going to check your website out. I'm sorry I didn't even do that before. I don't know why I didn't think about that. But for our daughter, it's like literally they have a ranking system right there on the homepage. It's like, how many days in a row have you been on this? And then they calculate it, and then there's a ranking system, and it's just like it's all rank-based. And it's like, I don't know. It's just, it's the same shit if you go that route.
Right. So here's something interesting. One of my heroes is Joseph Chilton Pierce, and I was honored to go to a symposium with him one weekend when I was living in California. He's since passed, but he wrote some amazing books. And in one of his books, he shares this statistic that it was a study done in the 1980s, and it compared, so it's basically your sensory perception. So sensory perception is the shades of color you see, it's just how you perceive the world through your five senses. And what they found were children that had no technology, that were just in nature, their sensory perception was 20 to 25% greater than children in Western countries who were watching television. Okay. And then Joseph Chilton Pierce estimated that children's sensory perception was declining overall 1% every year because of technology. Now, this is before computers, before iPads, before smartphones. I would love to know if we even have any children that don't have technology, what is the difference? So Joseph Chilton Pierce said, do not give your children any screens whatsoever until they're 11 years old and their brains have developed to the point that they're not going to lose their sensory perception. So it gets a little tricky, but it's possible to educate your kids without screens. And when I say without screens, I'm really saying no screens.
Yeah, no, for sure. And, you know, we're all guilty of it. I mean, especially, you know, younger parents, because I'll tell you, Caprice, you go out into a restaurant and then like your kid starts having just like this massive fit, you know, and you're just like, what do I do? What do I do? And it's like the easiest thing to do is just hand them the phone and not, you know, and as opposed to taking them out of the restaurant and making a scene and leaving the restaurant. Cause they're, you know, those are just the types of like reasons why people use technology. And I almost think that a lot of people would say to negate that. And I'm not saying I agree with you. I don't know if I would be able to do that now with where we're at and how we've allowed it to happen. But a lot of people say if you do that, then they're going to be behind with the way the world is going and how we're progressing in this technocracy type of environment. That would be almost a downfall for them if this movement weren't to be successful.
Well, I mean, yes and no, because my kids didn't get technology until they were middle school age, maybe like getting out of elementary school, you know, kind of 11, 12, 13. And they're fine. Yeah. They can pick it up quickly. So when my kid would have a meltdown, I handed them a, you know, Mr. Potato Head.
Right.
I mean, there are other things that you can do besides technology, because I don't think people realize what it's doing to their brains, because it's these flickering images. Like when you're in the real world, vision is connected to hearing, to taste, to everything. When you're just looking at a screen, that's the only sense that's being stimulated, but it's being way overstimulated, which is why children have no attention span. So, I mean, it's super tricky right now, but if you are really interested in the overall well-being of your child, which is going to involve, does their brain fully develop? And what I'm saying is technology is creating, it's what it's trying to do is limit us to like a 2D perception. Like think screens are just two-dimensional, right? So then it's easy to control us when they give us these childish, cartoonish narratives, because all we can do is live in a 2D world. We're not living in a 3D world where we are energetic, electric beings of light and we communicate with light. And so, I mean, I could just go on and on about this, but you need to let your kid be outside in nature, digging in the dirt as much as possible, definitely more than they're on screens, if you want them to develop their full potential.
Yeah, no, for sure. And I almost feel like just the end goal of that is just to be plugged into the matrix, because I know this is kind of stepping away from like homeschooling and stuff, but just for the sake of what you just said, you see Elon Musk just recently came out and they said they're going to start testing Neuralink on actual human beings. And the reason that, I guess, that I'm just putting this together is like, why do we need to put our kids on technology at such a young age? Is because it's preparing them for what's going to happen in the future. Like there's an end game to it. It's not just, hey, let's dumb you down in this 2D environment while you're 5 years old until you're 12. And that's all you do is consume technology. I think it's for a reason. And this is just a theory of mine. And this is what I truly believe is the movie WALL-E. I think that that's ultimately where we're heading to, is that's what we're going to be, is the movie WALL-E. Have you ever seen WALL-E?
No, I know my kids have, but I have not.
I mean, I think it's on Disney or you could rent it. I highly suggest watching it, because I honestly truly think that that's where we're going. A lot of subliminal messages in it and stuff like that. Basically, it's just humans have ruined Earth. They've ruined it because we consume so much. We consume. And they find a way to leave Earth, and AI kind of takes over this spaceship that's thousands of humans, but they're all overweight. They're in like a little floaty chair where they're just consuming their iPad right here while they're sitting in the chair, and they drink like, it's like called like a gulp or something. And that's just all they do. I just think that that's where humans are heading.
Well, they like to tell us what they're going to do before they do, right? That's their like vision for us, but I'm not interested. I'm not going to participate in that nonsense, you know, because, and I'm going to do a shout out to Matthew Arrett and his website, CanadianPatriot.org, because I've really learned a lot of the true history of the United States and other things by reading his books and listening to a lot of his work. And, you know, he really points out that the elites, I don't even like calling them the elites, the ones that are in control, are eugenicists. They're neo-Malthusians. And so they believe that we're on this planet that's a result of a big bang, that there's no creator, there's no purpose, it's just all random. And so you're a mistake, Paul, I'm a mistake, there's no purpose to our lives. And we're, you know, it's all gonna go die in this fiery ball through entropy. And so Matthew Arrett does a wonderful job of showing that the second law of thermodynamics is not true, that, you know, big bang is nonsense, you know. So the problem is that the people who wanna control us have a very dark, dystopian, distorted view of reality, but from that place they can then call us useless eaters, and what are we going to do with all these useless people? Oh, I guess we're just going to have to entertain them and drug them to death. I mean, so I know that within me is a spark of divinity, and I have a very strong connection with my creator, and I get wisdom downloads all the time. And so I think that's just, I'm not interested in this transhumanist crap. And I think a lot of what they say about the capabilities of AI is overblown. I think that they, but this is the power of the human imagination. If they keep giving us this dark dystopian future as if it's already happened and we believe them, then the power of our imagination and our collective consciousness will make it true.
Right.
So say, I'm not interested in your distorted view of reality, psychopaths. I can envision a beautiful, bright world for my kids and my grandkids, and that's all I'm going to focus on, and that's all I'm going to create. You go do you, but I'm not part of it.
No, 100%. I almost think that they don't even believe in it. They just knew that they had to create something to control us. You know what I'm saying?
Well, and I think, you know, what I've realized over the past week, because some of these psyops hook me too. I mean, really, like as you and I are trying to figure out, well, what's really true, I'll see someone who seems legitimate and seems like they've got a good heart, and they're telling me that we're at the end of times, you know?
Right.
And there's nothing we can do, and here come the CBDCs, and I go, right? And so I think that the biggest thing, like if you can believe, make people believe that we are at the end of times, that this is the end of the world, that there's no hope, then what do you? What are you going to do? You're just going to throw in the towel and you're become passive. I mean, that's what they want us to do, become passive.
Yeah.
And this, if there was ever a time in humanity where we needed to be proactive, now is the time.
Yeah, no.
And don't let them make your kids passive learners, because they were naturally wired to learn. They know how to learn. Just let them be free to play and learn what they're interested in. And if they're not interested in math, who cares? Don't teach them math. You know who sucked at math? Thomas Edison. He was told by his mother, a teacher told his mother that Thomas Edison was addled and would never amount to anything. So she pulled him out of school, tutored him, homeschooled him herself. He hated math, so they never did any math. They just read classic books. And later in his life, he said, I can always hire a mathematician. Yeah. I mean, if Thomas Edison didn't need to learn math, does your kid? I don't think so. Not if they hate it. And school math is just, don't even get me started. If you're going to teach your kids math, teach them sacred geometry.
Okay. I'll have to look into that. Now, there's just so many things that I just wanted to say, and it's just, it kind of, I lost it a little bit.
Oh, I'm sorry.
No, you're fine. It's just, it truly is wild. And I think that's the whole purpose of public education. I think you kind of talked about it, hit it on the head a little bit. Is that they are truly trying to take away that divine spark that's within our souls, truly. And what I've come to find out throughout this podcast and the people that I've had on the show, most of them, is that's what it boils down to. We go further and further away from that each and every single year, that at least that I've been alive on this earth. And you have to seek out those people who believe kind of what we believe in. You have to seek that out yourself. It's not out there being taught mainstream, you know? And so many people believe in that mainstream narrative, at least from what we can tell on like just numbers from YouTube and Twitter and all those types of things. You can see that majority of people are already hook, line, and sinker, indoctrinated, brainwashed, are already into that movement. So it's like we're a small movement, and I think that it can get loud. And if we do continue to do this, then there is hope, I guess, for people to find out why they're here and what their purpose is.
Right. And I mean, that's the hope that we need to instill in our children, because, you know, I have two daughters, 17 and 21, and my 17-year-old kind of knows what's going on. Like something, she's a little, you know, mom, that's kind of crazy. I don't think so. But she said that all of her friends, none of them have any hope for the future.
That's terrible.
And so that's why, you know, you and I also talked about another initiative that I'm trying to launch. I'm in the process of attracting advisory board members. I want 12 solid ones. But nocogs.com, people can check that out. And there's an interest list if you're interested. Because the thing that keeps K-12 schooling in place is the big carrot of college. You know, and the myth that you go, you get a college degree, then your life is going to be perfect and you're going to make a ton of money. And if you don't, you're just going to be a drunk in the, you know, in the alley. And that's not true at all. If you and I awaken to the truth, but our kids are still being taught lies and false beliefs, then when we're gone, they're going to believe what they believe, right? That's why I think it's up to us to really help the children stay connected to nature, keep the awe and wonder and curiosity and the divine spark alive within them.
No, 100%. So yeah, our daughter, she goes to co-op twice a week for 6 hours. I told you that in the email. Mm-hmm. And she loves it, you know, and that's a good thing. And I'm going to get on your website after this podcast. And that's basically what this comes down to. But as far as locally changing, like what it is that's happening in your state when it comes to public education, this is just kind of like, I've had a gentleman on quite a few times. His name's Pat Holland. And he started a grassroots movement here in Missouri. It's called the Missouri Freedom Initiative. And 3 years ago, they were a big proponent of passing the Second Amendment Preservation Act. Missouri is the freest gun state in all 50 states because of that organization that Pat's involved with. And this past year during legislation, Pat's just a citizen. All these people are just citizens. They're not lawmakers. They're not representatives. You have 30, 40 people, citizens, showing up to the Missouri Capitol every day while they're in session. And they're talking with senators and representatives and getting floor time and having conversations, trying to get legislation passed. And what they found out this year was that out of like the 50, there was like 54 pieces of legislation that had been thrown out on the table. Only 26 were passed or something like that. And only three of them weren't financially impacted. So it was just, what I'm saying is he had said there was a lot of stonewalling going on within Missouri. And it was mainly the House Speaker, Dean Plocker. And come to find out, he works for a law firm in St. Louis where they're funded by the World Economic Forum. So what I'm saying is it's going to be tough to even do it locally. And I know this is kind of going in a different direction, but I'm just trying to figure out a way, I guess. And maybe there just isn't a way, and just homeschooling is the way, I guess, basically is what it comes down to. Because I'm just trying to tell people on a lower level, it's going to be extremely hard to do. They tried to get sales tax off of food. Well, you know who showed up to go against that? The teachers union.
Really?
Oh yeah, because they in Missouri they get it's like 2 or 3% of the sales tax on food. It goes to public education.
Yeah, I mean, unfortunately, I do think that most of our politicians are either blackmailed or purchased.
Right.
And then, like, even in our school district, the school district got $59 million in COVID relief funds. And I'm like, where did that money go?
Exactly.
Where did it go? Yeah. I mean, I don't know. But it's tough. And as I said, I just finally realized that it's almost impossible to put innovation into a system that was designed not to be innovative.
Right.
So I wouldn't waste an ounce of my energy trying to do that. I would just try to partner with like-minded parents and create playgroups, create forest preschools, you know. And I think, once again, like, schooling is not learning. It's not education. Don't reproduce it. Like, take the burden off of you to think you have to be this uber teacher. You're the parent. You are never going to be able to replace school, because unless you're an extremely, I think I said this in my email, if you're not an extremely authoritarian parent, you're not going to get your kid to sit down and grind through those just brain deadening worksheets. So don't even try, because you'll ruin the relationship with your kid.
So
love your child, right?
100%. How do you navigate having to comply with state standards then when it comes to schooling?
So it really depends. I mean, every state is so different. And I have homeschooled in California, Texas, and South Carolina, and they're all different. So definitely it's good to be in a school where it's more free, like Texas. You don't have to do anything. You don't register your kid. Like, they don't even know you exist.
Oh, wow.
So that's great.
Right. No joke.
I mean, you know, people are going to say, well, then you have these like Looney Tune parents who are neglecting their kids. Well, yeah, but that's the exception. That's really the exception. Right. Right? And that's, so you have to have some protection around that. But so if you go to the Homeschool Legal Defense Association, they have a lot of support to make sure that you can comply with the state standards. But it's not as onerous as you think it is. And if you are in one of those states where it's really, really hard, I mean, they're probably curtailing your freedom in a lot of different ways too. So it might not be the best place to live.
Yeah. You get out of that state for sure. So what else in your book do you think is most important that people kind of need to know about? Because again, you compacted a lot of information into your book, and just trying to just, you know, pick out just the most important parts that you think.
Well, I think we touched on a lot of it. I mean, really, if you look at government schooling as an attempt to disconnect your kid from their divine spark and to dumb them down so they can't discern truth, they can't use their God-given powers of reason, and the George Land study, they're going to try and, you know, get rid of their genius so they're not going to innovate. I mean, if the problem is that parents still think that government schools are a positive thing because they think government is positive, right? Like, you just have to really kind of rip the, you know, the blindfold off and see it for what it is and realize that there has been a really strong propaganda campaign to convince you that you cannot teach your kids, but you are their first teacher. Nobody is going to know your children the way you do. Nobody is going to love your son or daughter the way you do. And it's hard because we're in an economy where it almost forces both parents to work. And that was purposeful, right?
100%.
So both parents have to work and you're getting squeezed economically from every side. Maybe your only option is this free childcare that they offer. But realize that with that free childcare, it comes at a great, great cost. And your children are the products and they are manufacturing them to be a certain way. So, but in numbers, if more parents withdraw and come together and hire a teacher that, you know, comes from a place of love and abundance, that's how we change things. So I know that really didn't go in deep into like what's in my book, but that's kind of the like synthesis of it, I guess.
No, for sure. No, that's beautiful. So we're coming up with about right around 10 minutes left. And I know you have a lot more that you can talk about than just homeschooling. I mean, you have an MBA in business, right? In finance.
Right.
So
from Carnegie Mellon.
Right. So what kind of, I guess a question I would have is what type, so you're very involved like with business, like especially.
Right. I mean, that's my primary career is I do business consulting. I help small businesses, especially local businesses. I help them grow and become profitable.
Okay. So what do you see in today's economy? I think everyone already knows the answer to this, but we see inflation at a record high for what, in the past 40 years, it's never been this high. So they say, and since you've been doing this for a while, is this kind of the worst that you've seen the economy in shape wise? Like with interest rates and just inflation and getting gas prices, go to the grocery store, you see all those things. I'm curious from someone who has a degree in business, what they think about that.
Well, it's all engineered for one thing. So, you know, if people really, I'm sure if they watch your podcast, they know the Federal Reserve is not federal. It's a private bank, right? So once you have private banks that just print money out of thin air, then they can control the governments. So they are the ones that are responsible for the boom and bust cycles, and they always make money, and it's always a way to consolidate wealth. So from, you know, the past 3 years, it's been the biggest wealth grab from Americans we've ever seen. You know, 2008 was really bad too, and it showed that there's a lot of banks above the law. So I think that I have a link on my website. Again, if you go to Caprice Lee, and it's lea.com, I have a link to a course I did called The Law for Mankind. And that is such an excellent course for understanding the difference between natural law and legal society and how you might operate in the private. So I highly recommend that course. It really opened my eyes. So a lot of people, you know, starting private membership associations, there's just ways that you can operate so that we are exchanging goods and services as men and women, not as these false legal entities. I mean, I think that's where we really all want to be, right? We want just to live our lives, to be left alone, and to take care of our families.
100%. But then you see like Amish farmers where, you know, you get the FBI or the FDA come in and just raid them because they say that their meat isn't safe. They don't properly. I mean, this is what they told the guy, which obviously he had been selling meat for probably 20, 30 years. Who knows? But right. They came in and they shut down his whole thing. They shut down his whole business.
Right. And they do that to scare everyone.
Yeah. But I don't think there's any legal precedence to do those types of things.
No, probably not, you know, but I think when I you know, I went through that course, and it just made me realize that, I mean, here's the thing, like usury is a sin in the Bible, right?
Yeah.
And if you look at the history of usury, it's pretty dark. And I just don't want to be part of a sinful monetary system that's based on debt. You know, so yeah, I mean, my degree was in finance at Carnegie Mellon, and I had to learn how money works after I graduated, because they're not going to teach me that there. They want me to go work on Wall Street, right?
Right.
So when you realize that banks just print money out of thin air, they're not going to the back room and getting something, they're just digits, and then you give them interest. Like, the whole thing is just such a sham, right? Once your eyes are open, you go, well, that's not really, you know, something I want to participate in. And I'm not advocating that anybody, the only thing I'm advocating is that people educate themselves. I'm not telling them what they should do or how they should operate their business, but just educate yourself so you know how things really work.
Yeah. And a lot of people, and again, it's because it's what they've created, especially with TikTok and short attention spans and how YouTube does it with YouTube Shorts. People aren't really going to seek out those types of things and want to read those articles and find that knowledge that empowers them to live a better life. It's coming fewer and far away. And I know that sounds dismal, but, and like I said earlier, you know, we just need to find more people like each other and create a community and just go from there. I know there are people out there, and there are some good things, I'm sorry, out of technology like TikTok and YouTube Shorts, is people are able to put content out there, whereas I never would have known who they were, who are like-minded like you and I. You know what I'm saying?
Well, and that's the thing. I mean, I have never tried to convince anyone to home educate their children. I more want to let people know I'm here if they want to home educate their children but don't know how. So I want to empower parents who already want to.
Right.
Yeah. Same with like the entrepreneurs and the business owners that I work with. If they have a mission in their company that's beyond just making money, but they've got some challenges, like, I think my biggest gift is I'm just like a wicked problem solver. Like, I love solving the stickiest of problems, you know? Well, why, what's going on with your business? Why isn't it profitable? Let's figure it out. But I love working with companies that are more heart-centered, mission-driven, not just, you know, trying to make as much money as possible. I mean, you need, you know, money, profit is the oxygen of a company, but it shouldn't be the purpose.
Right. No, for sure. Yeah. Well, I just hope and pray, man, that we can, you know, that more people seek this type of information out and then they try and apply it to their lives. And again, I think in the future, especially out here in America, if more people were to do it, I think it would obviously be a better place. I always picture a world where people are more in tune with themselves and nature, and I could always be better at doing those types of things as well. Again, I told you earlier, I'm trying to work on being a better man each and every single day until I die. But I always have this in the back of my head. I think that there has been a time on earth where people were more in tune with nature and with it is who they are and who their family members are. They would give 100% of themselves to each other, right? Obviously in different ways. The way you would give 100% to your wife is different than how you'd give it to your kid. But I think that there's been a time on this earth where humans were like that towards each other. And I can only imagine how beautiful of a place that was, you know, like,
right.
And how, we talk about utopia, and that's what we strive for, but we look at it in a way where the government controls it with a new world order or one world order or the World Economic Forum or the WHO or whatever it is. That's kind of how we vision like what they're going to create the utopia, right? When we don't need them at all. We can create the utopia within each other by building these communities. And I just think it would be a fantastic place to live in, because I don't think there would be crime. There wouldn't be poverty. There wouldn't be any of those types of things. We would all be here for each other. And it would just be
beautiful. I agree. And I have seen studies with young children, but, you know, 2-3 years old, and they find that most of them are naturally altruistic and cooperative. So I used to be a lot more naive. I had a pretty traumatic divorce, and my ex-husband has like some cluster B personality disorders that are pretty dark. So I realized that, and it might be shifting, but about 80% of people are like you and I, you know, they want to do good. They want to be better people. They want to cooperate. They've got some empathy, a conscience, but there's 20% who really have a very impaired conscience, no empathy, have no ability to see how their actions affect others. So those are the people that, like, the Inuit would, like, be like, oh, and, you know, when we've got a psychopath, we just kind of push them off the ice when no one's looking, right?
Yeah.
So that's who's controlling our society right now, are these people with no conscience or empathy. And that's not who I want to build a new world with. So I guess the thing is, we want to connect with people who have the same vision and values as us. And the way that they're trying to engineer society is they're trying to make more people like them, more narcissistic, right? More what's in it for me, me, mine, you only live once. And I think they're succeeding to some degree. You know, you talk about the epidemic of narcissism. And when I'm going to just wrap it around back to schooling, because if your son or daughter goes into school and they're naturally altruistic and loving and cooperative, and then they're forced to do the exact same thing as other kids, and oh, guess what? They're graded and they're ranked and they're forced to compete in this artificial competition. And oh, guess what? If they're helping each other, that's cheating. You know, like I've always told my kids, like, you know, life is an open book exam. And when you go and work at a company, you need to be able to cooperate with a project team. But they don't do that in school, right? It's this individualistic competition. And since they're always comparing you to everyone, it makes you very insecure. I mean, the psychological damage by schooling is just, it's just extreme.
No, it is. Yeah. And I think, like, there's a time and place for, like, competition, obviously in sports, I think, where you want, you know, that's the point of sports, at least competitive sports. That's the only, like, thing I would say different, like, when it comes to, like, comparing strengths and weaknesses, because I'm a big fan of sports, you know, and I mm-hmm. think that's, it's good, it's healthy, and all those types of things. So there's times, or yeah, there's a different, yeah, I see what you're saying, and that's just what popped up in my head whenever you said that. That's just,
yeah, no, I get that. And I'm not saying, but the like premier athletes aren't really competing. They're competing with themselves, right? They're always saying, could I have done that better? How could I have done that better? They're not necessarily competing with other people, is my understanding when I've seen their interviews. And both of my daughters are performers. So my oldest was a pre-professional dancer. And we would go to these dance competitions and I was, oh my gosh, like crazy, crazy stuff. You know, just the sexualization of these little girls is extreme. But then, you know, they would do musical theater and there are musical theater competitions. And my youngest has a beautiful voice. So there's singing competitions. I mean, everything is turned into a competition in this like hyper materialist. It's not even an individual. They don't want individuals, but they just want like automatons, like competing with each other. It's the strangest thing, right?
Yeah.
So if we can all just keep that divine spark and be of service to others. The one thing that the Walter Russell really pointed out is that we live in a world of giving and re-giving. So it's not giving and receiving. It's you give and then the universe re-gives back to you. But you need to give first.
100%. Right?
So we all have unique gifts and talents that the world desperately needs right now. We do not need any more hedge fund managers.
No.
Right?
That's for sure. Well, Caprice, where can we find you? Where can we find your work? I know you've said it a few times. Where can we find you? Any plugs that you want to give before we... we're right at the top of the hour. Sorry. I am rusty. It has been, like I said, 4 weeks since I've done a podcast, so I am very rusty today.
So you can go to Caprice.Lea. It's CapriceLea.com. You can check out my other website that is emerging, nocogs.com. You can find me on Instagram at Caprice.Lea Coaching. And then I have a Substack, Caprice.Lea. So it's pretty easy. And as I said, I put a lot of the stuff in my book, Healing from School, which you can get on Amazon or also on Gumroad.
Fantastic. Well, thanks for joining Talk Junkies. Look forward to talking to you soon. And but by the next time I talk to you, I will have finished your book and I will give you an update on how it is that we've been homeschooling our children.
Absolutely. And as I said, I mean, I do, you know, one-on-one coaching with parents who are struggling or who are kind of fearful but want to do this. So one of my passions is really empowering parents to educate their children in a way that works for their family, because every child is different and every family is different.
You might be getting a call from me soon then.
Okay.
Well, thank you, Caprice. Thanks for joining Talk Junkies. I'll be in contact with you soon.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome.